Welcome back to Don't Cut a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
Today we are two-thirds of the way through Kings of the Wild. Mm-hmm. So that's we're up to chapter 36, I believe.
Before we get into it, mm-hmm. Luke was telling me about some new technology that he's discovered for his dog, and I realized it was leading us into the warm-up for today. Luke, tell us about this new dog tech you've discovered.
So, incredible tech. Mm-hmm. So the problem here I was having is that my dog doesn't get, because of, I'm gonna blame it on her because of her own failings.
Good, bootstraps is not mentality.
Is not able to get outside, like run around with other dogs and exercise her mind time. Uh-huh. So we got this this little food puzzle ball thing. Mm. And I'm sure she kind of like hates it because it makes her work for food a mm-hmm. little bit more than she otherwise would have. But it's so cute because she just like nudges it along for like 30 minutes until she gets her food out. Uh-huh. And exercises her brain a little bit, which is what we needed for her.
And Luke, this was reminding me about some dog tech that I got, which is it's like a dog activity mat that it has these little like like puzzles on it that you hide a treat in it, and your dog is supposed to like figure out how to solve the puzzle to get the treat. The easiest one to explain is there's like one that's like an envelope. And so it has like a flap that folds over, and you put the treat in the envelope and fold the flap. But then it has like a loop that you put a stick through to keep the flap from opening again.
Okay.
And so the dog has to like pull the stick out of the loop and then open the flap and then get the treat inside.
That's complicated.
Okay. There's like three levels to this, right? The first level they say is to like just put the treat in the envelope and don't close the flap, and then mm-hmm. so that your dog can like figure out how to do that. Level two is like you close the flap but you don't put the little stick in, so it's they don't have to do that step. Level mm-hmm. three, which is the like the hardest level, this is the AP class, is you put the stick in, right? Three levels.
Yeah.
So I like for the first puzzle, we go through all three levels with my dog. Jolene is my dog's name. We go through all three levels with Jolene. She's doing mm-hmm. great. Next puzzle, I'm like, let's just see what happens. We go right to level three.
Oh, man. Okay.
We go right to level three. A minute later, Jolene's got the treat.
Wow.
Not to brag, I think my dog's a genius.
You got a smart one.
Now,
I'm impressed.
Luke, there's a problem with this, though.
Yeah.
This thing was kind of expensive, and I feel like if she just knows how to do all the things already,
it's like,
is this really problem solving, or is it just like, oh, I have to do these things to get the treat now?
Right. I mean, this is kind of the problem with these, where they are a short-term thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least for the ones where like they have to identify what they have to do.
Yes.
Because we did something kind of similar. It was much more easy mode mm-hmm. where it was like there were a couple like pieces that you put the treat under and she has to like rotate them and then like take a piece off or something like that. Mm-hmm. And after, first of all, my dog Kaya is my dog's name, not the smart kind.
Doesn't have book learning is what you're saying.
Right. And so it took her a while to figure out, but eventually she also finally figured out that this thing was not super, like it could not withstand just her like knocking it around.
The brute
force.
So
she started just like flipping it over.
Amazing.
As soon as we set it down. And then so I was like, all right, this is done.
Yeah, that's quite good. It's led me to sort of an interesting question though, Luke. And the question is, do you think it's harder to design like an intelligence test, like a general intelligence test for people or dogs?
Ooh, a general intelligence test. I don't know.
Or maybe like a let's get more specific here. Like a puzzle solving intelligence test, or like sort of trying to assess that particular skill. Here's my issue. It seems obvious, right? On its face, it kind of seems obvious that like people probably have more capacity, so it might be harder to design those, right? But you get to a point where like you know a lot better, I think, a human's capacity. Like I am very aware what a human's like limitations are. Maybe there's dog puzzles we've never even thought of before.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is though, that for the dog ones, they basically they have to center around getting food, I guess.
Yeah, isn't that how the people ones work too? I've done psychology tests, Luke. All right,
that's true.
You hit the buttons in the right order, and they give you a little treat. I like the grapes. I like when they give me grapes.
Okay. Yeah, this is true. I don't know. I feel like I honestly think it might be. I think it's probably harder actually to do the dogs because it's much harder to just like to reliably do dogs. I'm gonna say reliably, because like you really only have time until completion as your metric. Whereas for like humans, you know, you've got correct answers, time, all that kind of stuff, I feel like. Multiple degrees of freedom. Am I using that correctly?
Sure. Right now. Why not? Look, we both have PhDs. You're using it correctly.
That's right. That's my answer, though.
Okay. I'm still inclined to say people, but I think it's close.
It's close. Yeah. All right. Well, what do you think? Would you rather have a smart dog or a dumb dog?
Oh, this is a good question, because
I'm going dumb dog. I'm going dummy.
I think a dummy is like definitely a better. A dummy dog is an easier dog to have, right?
Yeah.
Because I have to worry about my dog like stealing my identity when I'm not looking.
Of course, the classic thing we all worry about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me a dumb dog any day.
Especially considering like I don't need her to do a job. Like we're not in a circumstance anymore where my dog needs to be smart enough to like herd sheep. Okay. I don't need a dog that smart, because the most I'm asking them to do is like sit when I tell them to.
Right. See, the problem though is my dog cannot figure out any forms of play. Like fetch
doesn't work.
Can't figure it out.
Tug of war.
You know, tug of war doesn't work.
Oh no.
And so it's like, I don't know how to entertain you because you're too dumb to entertain. Other than just going on a walk.
Did you try TikTok? Because apparently it works like a charm.
You know, I haven't tried that yet.
I feel like dogs could use it. Just like use their nose to like scroll to new videos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Has anybody tried that, by the way? Because I feel like you could do a pretty easy experiment with a dog and TikTok.
I would love to try that. We got to get multiple. We need a comparison of our two dogs.
Yeah.
What their algorithms turn into.
I'd be concerned. I'd be a little concerned.
We all would.
Anyway, Luke and I could have dog talk for the whole episode, but we probably should move on to book.
Yeah, before I start showing you guys pictures of my dog.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk book up to chapter 36.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, I had an early note that I ended up reversing later on. But so in this section, we finally catch up to the final member of our group, Ganelon. Is that how we're pronouncing it?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Who has been in like a form of jail?
Yeah,
where they are turned to stone, and they just kind of sit there. right? Mm-hmm. Kind of like a Han Solo situation.
Yes, exactly like that.
And initially, it was kind of like, this is not the worst thing to happen.
Honestly, seems like the best.
The worst. It seems like
the best type of jail.
Yeah.
Right. Very low cost to keep them in prison safe. They're not going to escape. They're not going to like harm right. anybody else. They're like removed from society. You can check in with them. Maybe in the future they develop some kind of therapy that's like, hey, this therapy, this is going to help you out. Now we can unfreeze you and put you through this regimen.
Right. I'm not sure if that's the goal of this society, but yes.
Yeah.
But then, so this was my initial note. And then later on, we learn that they're still like awake during this.
Mm-hmm.
And this changes things.
In
multiple ways, because now it's like an actual punishment. But the thing that I want to say is that like, it's not good for society because like now you have, after they are released, they are probably like kind of insane.
Yeah.
Right. So now you're basically like, all right, what we have done is not affected this person's physical abilities at all. So they're still perfectly capable of doing harm.
Yeah.
But we've also made them insane.
Yeah. We've put them in solitary confinement for 1,000 years, and we also gave them a barbell. And so now we're just hoping that fixed them.
And so it feels like one of those things where they're just like, we'll push this off into the next generation or whatever. But why?
I also was sitting here like, why? What is the purpose of this? Because this does not feel like a society that holds life very sacred.
Right.
So it's like, just hang them. Hang them. What are you doing? Like, if you're going to do this to somebody, why do you go to all this trouble?
Yeah.
Unless the only circumstance where I could see it being used is the circumstance where it's like a really powerful, maybe it's like the son of a really powerful king or something. And so like them being alive is key. And so like their like wealthy dad gets them off, and the plea that they do is like, you're going to be a statue for, you know, 50 years or whatever. But for just like for Ganelon, just like a dude.
Yeah.
No, you executed. How is that not the punishment?
He's convicted of like several murders.
Yeah, correct.
This punishment makes no sense.
Right.
And is there's no reason for it.
No. Not at all.
I don't get it.
Maybe this society is just way more progressive, Luke, and their capital punishment just does not exist.
Mm-hmm. That seems likely, yeah.
And so this is their solution. Well, Luke, to get to one of my early notes here, we meet a person called Tia Max, who is a spider guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's incredibly progressive.
Arachnid, I think is what they call him.
An arachnid. I think it's incredibly progressive that they're like, yeah, you could be a part of our society, sure. And we'll even let you in our band.
Yeah, yeah.
Because can you imagine for a moment if in the year 2025 we discovered a race of sentient spider people and one of them was like, hey, I'd like to be a citizen of your country? We'd be at war immediately. Like, we would be at war.
It would be crazy.
Instantly. And everyone would be like, yes, this is a good war. We haven't done many of those good wars, but this one is right.
Yeah, it'd be tough. It'd be tough. The spider option is bad.
Especially considering this, I'm having a hard time distinguishing where the monster, like, person line is. Because, yes, there are people that sort of run this world. Like, what I'm assuming are, like, human people. But they also seem to allow a lot of non-human creatures into their societies as well. Like, what is a monster then? Just a creature that has no like higher reasoning skills, or
well,
the lines are getting blurry for me.
The lines are very blurry, in terms of like sentience.
Yes,
because to me, it kind of seems like what is termed monster often are sentient creatures. Like, and this is kind of the point that our big enemy, I kind of forget his name, the Druin,
yeah,
is saying, where he's like, you know, well, actually, they're not all sentient, right?
Right.
I don't know.
He's kind of saying that he can't negotiate with them in a reasonable way.
Right. Like, some of them are, like the troll doctor that we see later,
mm-hmm.
seems to be. And then, you know, the snake lady, all this mm-hmm. kind of stuff. I will say, I don't think there are a couple examples of these quote unquote monsters slash people mm-hmm. being in society, but not many. And what's her name? What's the lady that's the snake?
I don't remember. She's dead now.
Well, it doesn't matter. She anyway kind of talks about how life is not super easy for her in this respect as well.
Sure. Sure.
Great. And I guess she's, yeah.
This sounds like sort of the deal as well with our bounty hunter, the night, what, mm-hmm. lark? Nightlark or something like that?
Dang it, why are we so bad with names? I literally read this earlier today.
I know.
The hot girl.
Sabatha, maybe? Wings.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, she seems to be sort of representative of somebody who's on the border of, like, monster person.
Yeah, mostly person, though, for her.
Right, and it's crazy to me that they're cool with the spider guy, but they all are, like, dunking on her. Anyway.
It is odd, yeah. I am into all the different, like, things, though.
Yeah.
Like, we even see some kobolds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the problem is that all of these people slash monsters are also, like, one slip up away, and not even necessarily their slip up, from being put into the arena.
Yeah. Oof. Well, not anymore, Luke.
True. True. Which actually, this is a good transition, because my next note is in the arena.
Okay, take us there.
So our crew, after everyone's reconvened, mm-hmm. Gets sent into the arena as the kind of headliner, mm-hmm. and they are there to fight a chimera, which is this big monster with three heads, dragon, lion, goat, I think.
Goat. Mm-hmm.
And so the problem is that chimeras also have wings,
mm-hmm.
and they're in like a stadium, right? And so like to protect the crowd, I guess, they just bind the chimera's wings.
Uh-huh.
Did we not like think about how this might not work? I mean, it's fighting against people with sharp weapons, and it's just like, we're just binding it with like rope. So almost certainly that's going to get cut.
Maybe it adds to the thrill, Luke. Maybe this isn't the first time this has happened and people know what they're getting into.
Okay.
I also think this is a society that conceives of itself as in command of nature, as like dominate over the Heartwild and the creatures there. Like when Clay sees it, he's like astounded that they caged a chimera, and also like, why the fuck would you cage a chimera? Like, you kill a chimera, right? You don't cage it. And so clearly things have progressed from the days of Saga to like, and people don't even really go in the Heartwild that often. It feels like an age where this society feels like they're in control over monsters and nature. And you know, we saw what happened. We saw the outcome of that. I feel like this should have been their go-to move. I feel like they should have been trying to do this from the beginning of like, oh, that feels like we could cut those ropes, guys.
Yeah, yeah. That's like in when you're playing a video game and there's like an alternate solution to the thingy. That's clearly it.
Right. It's unfortunate because Moog or Clay would have been the ones to have to identify this. They're clearly the like clever brainiac boys.
Right.
And they just, they're not on their game right now. They're not quite on their game.
Not in the game. You gotta identify when you look at it, it like glows a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you free it. Now you're riding the Chimera, right?
Now it's taking you to save your daughter. Did you ever think about that?
Exactly. Apparently not. But instead, we get the destruction of this whole facility, basically.
Yes.
I think.
Yes.
Because they have made it like a floating platform that's just like attached to a couple corner pillars that are gone now. So pretty rough.
Yeah, pretty rough. Also unclear why it had to be anchored in the river, unless it was like, you know how there's those floating casinos that they like legally they can't be on land, but if it's a river boat, then they can have gambling.
Yeah.
I feel like there was an old law or something that required it to be floating.
It's like zoning laws.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to think that that's what it is. Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. It's a fun spot. You get a little seasick while you're watching. It's pretty
perfect.
Cool.
We love that. We all love that.
Okay.
Can we move ahead a bit?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so they get geared up, which is a scene I always love to see.
Uh-huh.
And they do it in a pretty great way, where they're really sticking it to their old boss, kind of, or their old agent.
Yeah.
And they eventually like take him with them on the ship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And their plan is they're going to drop him off far enough distance away where he can't like immediately chase them.
Right.
And he decides his best response to this is to like threaten Clay with the death of his family when he gets back.
Yeah.
How did you think that was gonna go, my guy?
So I have a similar note here where it's just like, at this point, like obviously you just kill him. Which yeah. I mean, Clay does in like a fit of rage, but like what?
Even if you're not in a fit of rage, like that's the logical thing to do is like, oh, if we let you go, you're gonna go kill my wife and burn down my house. Well then
yeah.
You don't get to go free anymore. Like you're not right. Gonna go.
Right. If someone's threatening you and you have the power to prevent them from doing the thing, then you're gonna at least think about it.
Yeah, right. Like he's like begging him to throw him overboard at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
How?
And even if like even if it's not a fit of rage, like you said, like here guys, team meeting. Should we kill him actually instead of just dropping him off? I feel like we should just kill him.
Guys, he literally just threatened like all of the things we hold dear in this world, and he has the power to make good on those threats. We have to kill him, right? And it's not even like a really bad thing that we kill him because he's like threatening to do some horrific stuff that he could probably do.
It's pretty much only our morals that would stop us from killing him, and we don't really have those at this point in our lives, probably. So, yeah. My only thing though is our age-old thing of like,
I know
you confirm,
I know,
you don't
Luke.
Just throw him off, you confirm that he's dead,
especially considering we had two other people fall off the ship and they were totally fine.
Yeah,
you gotta watch him hit the ground, especially because he's got all these magical
one,
clearly he's not dead. Can't be. Yeah. Didn't see a body. Gotta be alive. Two, the way he's gonna get out of this, Buddy's got a bunch of magical artifacts and stuff. He's for sure got a Featherfall totem or whatever. And he's going to give us a wrinkle when we get back. I think when we get back from our quest. I don't think he's following them there.
Okay.
But I
think he's doing a little like end of Lord of the Rings where they come back to the Shire.
The desolation of the Shire. This is literally the connection I was about to make. Yes. Exactly.
People forget about the desolation of the Shire.
Can't forget. Got to read the books, guys. Got to read the books.
That will be very frustrating. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Anyway.
So that's funny that that's a classic us having the same note. I think I have something also like right before this.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a callback to our previous episode. So in this section, Clay reveals to the group that Moog the Wizard has the rot, right?
Yes, yes.
And our guy Marty, who used to be the king,
yep,
is said to be like really care about Moog a lot, and he kind of has a little freak out and everything. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, like, you guys had little mirrors to travel easily between each other's houses, and so like if you loved each other so much, maybe you hang out a little bit more before this.
I feel like it makes their separation like sadder as time goes on, especially considering that like these two were like closest with each other in the group, and they had this way of instantly communicating with each other and like hanging out, and
yeah,
they never took advantage of it for like a decade or more.
It's very sad. Yeah,
it's a big bummer. And now Moog has the rot. Ugh, it's tough.
Very, very tough.
We also see Moog apparently, it was like right around this part. He has like another one of these orbs that does the scrying thing.
Yeah.
So I guess they're just a lot more common than we would assume.
I think it works like slightly different, or does it work the same way?
It works the same way, but it's shorter range from what I remember.
Okay.
But like he just whipped out another one. He had two. He like brought along another one. So they can't have
That's
been
good.
That.
It still doesn't change our previous note where you can't break these things.
No, absolutely not. The other thing, Luke, that feels a little sad to me is Clay. Okay, so they're walking around the Heartwild, and Clay is reminiscing about how it still haunts him, and he like wakes up from these horrific dreams of things that happened or may have happened in the Heartwild. And one of the things he says is he's like, there are things that you don't tell the people that you love about. And it's just very like, it's very like old man goes to war coded.
Yeah.
Of like, no, actually that's the problem. Like you really should probably talk to people that you love and care about these things. Please tell your wife about your trauma. She seems like she would really help you through some of it.
Yeah.
Bud.
You should talk to somebody about it at least.
Like why, what's the like why wouldn't you tell them about it? Like explain it to a 5-year-old why you wouldn't tell your wife about these horrific nightmares and this like PTSD that you suffer through.
Right. we're coming up with very similar notes. Because like I imagine it's also very frustrating for her. Like so again, if you talk, people get over things much more easily if they're able to talk them out, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And clearly this has been bothering you.
Right.
And so there's the benefit to Clay of talking about it. But yeah, it got to be so frustrating for Jenny, I think is his wife's name.
Yeah.
Where it's like, please, just, I want to help. Like, that's what partners do. And that's what they want to do. And
right.
I'm getting a little bit worked up about it.
I know. I know. It's like, Clay, come on, my guy, please.
Clay is a very frustrating character to me. Mm. Because, like, there's a lot of times where he's described as being, like, the polar opposite of what he was just described as, like, a chapter ago or something like that. And I can't tell if that's intentional, because there is the little duality that he keeps going back to about, like, you know, again, his wife asks him, are you the beast or the man or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he talks about all the terrible things he's done and how full of anger he is and stuff like that. But then, like, a little bit later, he'll be described as like a gentle giant. And it's like, no.
Right.
What are you talking about? So I don't know. I have a hard time keeping up with him.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I'm gonna critique him for is he has the trait of, like, thinking that it's cool to not care about things, I think.
Mm. Where does this come up?
The things that I'm thinking of are, like, Moog, for example, is always, like, wanting to talk about something.
Oh,
like, has an interesting
yes.
tidbit about something, or, like, a fun story.
Yeah.
And Clay will be like, that's stupid. Or I tuned mm-hmm. him out.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, has some little sarcastic quip that's not actually, like, a quip. It's just, like, I'm not interested in that.
Yes.
And it's like, hey, Clay, what are you interested in? Because, like, it's actually cool to have interests.
Yeah. Like, what do you like to do aside from reminisce about how you're so angry or, like, killed your dad and drink sometimes?
Right. Maybe if you saw the, I don't know, eccentricity of Moog, and if you were like, I'm not going to go there, but I see that it makes him happy to care about things. Let me,
right.
I don't know. Try to see if that fits my lifestyle as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially considering, like, I don't know, maybe this is just because I'm an academic, but Moog starts talking about something, I'm like, I mean, that's kind of interesting.
Honestly, a lot of the things that he brings up, it's like, let me talk about this, actually.
It's like, wait, he's going to tell us about how these ships fly in the air. He knows how they fly. That's kind of cool.
Kind of cool. He knows a lot.
He seems to know a lot. Tell me more, Moog.
And Moog, he seems like just a fun guy.
He
does. He seems to tell us stuff in like with enthusiasm. I like
that.
And then okay, last thing about Clay that's kind of back to my first note. When he's talking to Ganelon about the stone thing and, like, his guilt over it, Ganelon's like, I wasn't actually mad at you. I was just like, you're the best person I know. And so how could I, like, how bad of a person am I if you didn't come to save me? And it's like, sorry, what's the evidence that Clay is a super good person?
I mean, so I think part of the reason why, there seems to be this weird dichotomy between mm-hmm. Clay being like a monster and a man is I feel like Clay perceives himself as way worse than he actually is. Like, I feel like Clay mm-hmm. has residual guilt over killing his father, which sounds like, from the brief descriptions about what was going on, kind of justified. We'll see what the story is when it comes out, but, and, like, he was getting into big fights with people when his wife, like, asked him to choose. But I feel like he's probably a lot nicer of a guy than I think he's giving himself credit for. And he's our narrator, so we only get his
perspective. Okay, sure.
And so, like, I think he probably did occupy more of, like, a gentle giant role within this crew.
Okay.
He just has a very high standard for himself because he's done.
Sure. And I will say he seems to get into a lot of fights,
mm-hmm.
but everyone does.
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe he's below, like, getting into fewer fights than the average person.
Right. He also seems to, like, be pretty upset when he kills people. Like,
yeah,
it seems to stick with him. So, and he seems to, like, try and avoid it if he can.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
That's fine. Yeah, that's okay. That's fine. I guess maybe it's a low bar, but I think the bar is being set by everyone else. And so,
right.
Maybe he's
right. Like,
in relative terms, a good person.
Like one of these city guards hears some of his stories and is like, oh, wait a minute. I don't know about this Clay guy.
yeah.
But among their crew, you know, he's got the least dirt on him. I have a criticism for Moog.
Okay.
I think you bury the hat. I don't think you bring the hat.
At the end here, you mean?
No, I think you find out what the hat does, and I think you burn it before you tell everyone else. You don't bring the hat.
Okay.
Because the hat is a crutch.
To lose?
The hat is a crutch. You need to try new things. They're out there in the Heartwild. They meet a troll, a sentient troll, who offers them a home-cooked meal. And Moog's like, but what about a chicken? And they're like, oh, we'll go with the chicken. And it's like, put down the chicken nuggets. Try sushi, guys. Try it once.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, I misunderstood, but yes.
Instead, they're just pulling whole roast chickens out of the hat. Like, how are you ever going to learn if you like a new cuisine if you don't try it?
Well, here's the thing. Like, we can compromise here. You know, bring the hat and, like, on the days where you're just, like, marching, you're like, we need a meal for tonight, whatever. Mm-hmm. Use it, right? But in the days where someone else is preparing your meal and it's something you've never tried before, yeah, give it a shot. Eat a full serving. Hey, even if it's not for you, you know what? I had a full serving. I tried it. Mm-hmm. I've got, you know, to get my calories up, I'll pull out of the hat.
I've got a sleeve of Oreos in here I was saving.
Exactly.
Luke, I appreciate your optimism in this crew, your faith in this crew, but I don't think that they could withstand the temptation. Like, I think these people are somebody among them is a little baby who would say, I want my nuggies. I don't actually want that. I'm not going to eat it. and then as soon as one person does it, it's like, well, if he's having nuggies, I also want nuggies.
Right. Okay. Fair point. So the examples that we've seen are the troll doctor, the witch doctor cooking up a little something. Definitely try that. You try on the whatever the cannibals are whipping up.
All right. Well, here's the thing about that. Do you think you could tell him you have like a dietary restriction, like you're vegetarian or something? Like, hey, do you guys have a vegetarian option?
It would be very tough to convey this information. I don't think so. Here's the thing.
There can't be that many people out there, right? Like, these people have to be going hungry a lot of the time if they're only eating people. There's no way that they're only eating people.
In theory, I agree with you. Like, and for somehow this place seems to be loaded up.
From a pure thermodynamic standpoint, it does not work. You cannot eat only people if you're also the ones making the people.
Right. I agree.
So just get the veggie
option. You're saying the people is like a rare treat for them?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And just like say respectfully, I'm vegetarian. I'm not, you know, criticizing your lifestyle choices, but I would hope that you respect mine as well, and I'd like the veggie option, please. Mm-hmm. I do eat eggs and cheese, so, you know, you can... No, I didn't say legs and feet. I said eggs and cheese, sir.
Here's an interesting question for you. Mm-hmm. We talked earlier about the difference between monsters and humans.
Ooh.
There's presumably some degree of, like, if you're living in the forest,
mm-hmm.
there's, like, plenty of monsters to hunt.
Yes.
Does that count as cannibalism?
No. Definitely not. Can't be.
Okay.
Too many things eat humans, right? The centaurs are eating humans. The humans are eating humans. Wait a minute.
So can you eat centaurs?
Wait a minute, Luke. I mean, yes, certainly you could eat. Just the bottom half, though.
Right.
Luke, maybe they do need to get rid of the hat. Because think about how many creatures eat humans.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be something to it, right?
You've
got a vast diversity of things you could eat. The fact that you keep coming back to human is like, it might be really good.
Wait, so are you saying they should?
You could try it.
Okay. We're considering cannibalism.
Have here. A little nibble, because
okay.
Now it's kind of a curse if you find out that it's the greatest thing you've ever eaten.
A huge
but then aren't you potentially cursing yourself anytime you eat anything?
Well, you're not cursing yourself to become a cannibal.
Sure, but maybe there's
if you're like, oh, that burger was really good, turns out I do like beef a lot.
Sure, but like maybe there's a cookie that they only sell in New Zealand and Australia and you realize it's your favorite thing.
Right.
That's sort of a curse, you know? Maybe not as much of a curse, but...
Yeah, different magnitudes, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some people might put them in different categories, but... we're open-minded here.
We're being open-minded, okay? Dan's not going with one of these hats.
This is clearly an example of being open-minded, for sure. Mm-hmm. I do think that, to extend your point about going without the hat, like... We've got a lot of non-human creatures in here that we need to test out. Right?
You mean taste out?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, from a personal standpoint, Luke, speaking as an IRL vegetarian, I would say no. Speaking as somebody in this world, I would say yeah, definitely.
Okay. I love that you're like... you. Oscillating between willing to try cannibalism and being like, no, I'm actually a vegetarian, so I can't eat meat in this. But anyway, yeah, check it out. Hey, troll guy, can we actually just like chop off some arms?
Whoa.
See what's going on. Have we talked about this? This sound, I feel like this is familiar, but this is like a source of infinite food, right?
Yeah, this is like infinite, like, yeah, potentially. If you could do like a spell where you cross, you get this ability on like a chicken or something, this is infinite nuggets.
Right. But in a better way than the hat. Okay.
Yeah. A much better way.
The hat is a different form of cheating that we don't support.
Luke, I am surprised to learn how many things live in the forest that are like sentient and form societies.
Mm-hmm.
Because from my understanding, the forest is home to the rot.
Yeah.
So it seems like none of these things would be able to like survive that long. Like it feels like my point here that I'm trying to get to. Moog was doing research in entirely the wrong way.
Mm.
Moog needed to go find some societies and cultures that live in the Heartwild and figure out how they deal with the rot, because they live there, so they have to like have some, they probably have some knowledge about what to do with it or anything about it, or like the people that live among it are the ones you talk to. You don't just like steal samples out of there and like poke and prod them to figure out. That's not gonna work.
We're going to do an academic analogy here.
Yeah.
Where I feel like Moog is not aware that he needs to do a literature review first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and see if there are other people that might have already done this research.
Right, right. Moog's thinking he's inventing the wheel, and there's people riding bikes around.
Yeah, yeah. What's going on? In terms of just numbers on the rot.
Yeah.
Like, it seems, and the amount of fear that people have about getting it just from stepping foot in there, it seems like you are fairly likely to get it.
Yes, yes.
And it seems like we don't, just like being around it.
Right.
You just like have a certain chance of getting it.
Being in the Heartwild, yeah, yeah.
Right, it's not like there's an incident, like an incident that happens.
No, no.
Like you, like a poison ivy situation.
Right, right.
But especially, like this, yeah. These cannibals, because they are humans.
Yeah.
And so like I could see there being something where like it only affects humans. But they're a large society of humans, and we only see like one incident of the rot. Granted, maybe there's plenty more that we're just like not really seeing.
Well,
but...
no, this is the other thing about it though, right? They seem to respond in a way that isn't how people in the cities respond to it, right? They would have, I am guessing, seen this before. I'm assuming this is not the first time they've seen it. So when Moog assumes that they can't cure it, I'm like, hold on, because they called for like a doctor shaman. They didn't just give up. They weren't just like, oh, they have the rot, they're gonna die. They like called for medical help, which indicates to me there's something you can do. Okay,
it's there's two options, right? This is the first time they've seen it, which would be an interesting result.
Would be remarkable, yes.
Or, yes, there is something that doctors can do to, if not, like, cure it, at least, like, stall it a little bit.
Yes, yes. So you stick around, because they're doing something here, Moog.
Yeah. I don't know. He's an independent researcher, Dan.
Yeah, he's doing his own research.
No, single author researcher on every paper.
Good luck, Moog. That's why he makes boner pills, Luke.
That's right. What are your we've been in the forest for a little while. What are we thinking? As bad as everyone says?
Yeah.
So okay, here's the thing. Normally I'm against deforestation. But like, I don't understand why we're not just like, hey, let's just, there's not really any drawbacks to just like logging in here.
Yeah, this is a place full of horrors. It's free real estate, in my opinion.
Yeah. Give me industrial lumber. Move in, please.
We need to start having naval battles, big naval battles, so we can use all this lumber for ships.
This is why they've built all these coliseums.
Yes.
They're like, what can we build? We need to create economic demand for lumber so that we can start deforesting the Heartwild or whatever it's called.
Yeah, the Heartwild.
Because it's like a huge problem. Like,
it's a huge problem. Two, it's horrific. Nobody wants to go there. This is not like a nature walk. The one that really gets me is the carnivorous plant that like screams the last words of the people that it's just eaten.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh no, we're burning it.
What are you doing, plant? This is not an evolutionary advantage for you. You're just being cruel, I think.
Well, right? I think it's trying to get people to come in and help the people that are stuck in it.
Yeah, but don't you think it wouldn't do the like last words of the last person? It would like have its own, I don't know.
It would do the first words. Yeah, this place is horrific.
It seems rude. Yeah.
I, for one, think we should be producing palm oil in the Heartwild, so
yeah,
burn it down.
Do something.
Yeah.
Let me see what else. I think I might be out of notes, actually.
Yeah, I'm pretty close as well. And by pretty close, I mean I don't have any more notes.
I will say at the end here we might be getting your writ. At the end here we might be getting your wish.
I noticed that.
I think we're losing the hat.
Pretty sure the hat's going to these cannibals, which feels like a waste, right?
Yeah, I am curious about the limitations on the hat.
Whoa, no.
Both on like categories of food and just quantity, right?
Luke, this is just yet another example of something that if the quantity is somewhat unlimited, should have been used in a serious economic capacity before now.
Right. Yeah, and how does it do it? Can you feed recipes into it? I don't know. How much control do you have over it?
It doesn't even really matter.
Give me more tests. Why are we always doing this?
This is priceless. Truly a priceless artifact.
I love that Cal just has it hidden away.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, buddy, you're like clearly a glutton for stuff. This is like the ultimate thing. You gotta have this out.
Even just for your personal use, like put this somewhere.
Frustrating.
I don't know, Luke, but we'll see if they get a little more adventurous in their cuisine after this. I'm hoping so.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe there's a delicacy that cures the rot we don't know about that they haven't tried.
Try anything. Start eating dirt.
I hear the Heartwell's a great place to just eat random things, so.
Yeah.
Good luck
out
there. We're going to find out if they make it. Luke, I have a feeling like we're not going to get the rescue done at this book.
We've got... We're getting down to the wire here.
It's getting close.
We'll see.
So we'll see. Maybe they'll get there. Maybe they'll get through the Heartwild by the end of this book. But who knows? We'll find out... We'll find out next week. We'll be bringing the hot takes.
And being dumb nerds.